So let's start. This is class number 4 of Jewish Fundamentals, right? So this is our final class. Everybody's showing up today because they want to know what's going to happen in the end, right? So everyone wants to know what's going to be. There's an old joke that goes as follows. It's a little bit of a joke. It's a little bit not of a joke. The story is that gentleman dies, goes up to heaven, and he comes up to heaven and he sees that he sees this rabbi, his rabbi, with his long beard and his coat, etc., sitting on a beach, sitting on a beach chair, and serving him drinks is a woman in a bikini. And he says to the rabbi, "Rabbi, I don't understand. This is heaven?" And the rabbi says, "No, this is her hell." And then it made sense. Everybody got it? Okay. So the question of exactly what happens in heaven and hell, there are those who say that it's subjective. Right? That for this woman in the bikini, serving the rabbi a drink in a bikini, that was her hell. And that's subjective, therefore everybody's hell is subjective. And then there are those who seem to have more of a broader response of exactly what happens. As we explained before, there is no one who knows for sure what happens. Why not? Because no one's ever been interviewed. Right? You never had anybody who leaves and comes back and says, "Let me tell you what it was like." There are those who do say that, and we don't really believe them. We think that they had a head injury or something like that. And so in reality, we don't know exactly what takes place. There are a variety of different opinions, but there are some sources. In fact, the Talmud in the 10th chapter of Tractate Sanhedrin gives us some details of different aspects of the afterlife. And that's what we're going to be focusing on today. Now, in the prayer that we say on Shabbat, there's the prayer Kel Adon. If you're familiar with the prayer Kel Adon, prior to that prayer, there is a little prayer that says the following. Who is compared to you? There is no one, no comparison to you in this, to our God, to you, our God, in this world. In the life of the world to come, there will be nothing without you. Our Redeemer in the Messianic days, there will be none like you. And you will be our Savior at the resurrection of the dead. So we've listed four different stages. Four stages. Again, there is Olam Hazad, this is this world. There is Olam Haba, there is the next world. There is Messianic times, right? The Messianic times we talked about last week, but we... There's Messianic times, which we talked about last week, which is another stage. And then there is what we call Tchiyat HaMeitim, which is resurrection of the dead, which we have not talked about. Last week we mentioned that Messianic times, which has sort of been monopolized by the Chabadniks, is really not supposed to be, that we really believe in Messianic times. That unfortunately they've sort of stolen it and capitalized on it. We really have a belief, very much so, that Maimonides says it's one of the 13 principles of faith. In fact, it's number 12. The 13th principle of faith is this Tchiyat HaMeitim, the resurrection of the dead, that we believe with a perfect faith that God will resurrect the dead. Now, what we're going to do today is we're going to find out a little bit, and at least, again, one interpretation or one version, or perhaps a variety of versions put together, of what happens when we die. Okay? Now, we're going to do our best. Okay? If you have any questions, I'm going to try to take them, but if I ask you to hold on to the end, you'll please accommodate. Okay? So, let's first start off is, what happens when we die? Let's go through again. We have this world, we have the next world, we have Messianic times, and we have resurrection of the dead. Keep that in mind as we go through each stage. In this world, we all live, correct? We live, we breathe. and then we die. What happens when we die? The Talmud tells us that there are three times when there is Yom Hadin, the Day of Judgment. Three times in our that there is a Day of Judgment. What's the first? Not Yom Kippur. That's the Day of Atonement. Rosh Hashanah is called Yom Hadin. It's the Day of Judgment. Yom Kippur, for those who remember, Yom Kippur is if you didn't do it right the first time on Rosh Hashanah, which of course most of us don't, then we have a 10-day window to sort of fix what we did wrong. So the atonement, but the righteous, according to the tradition on Rosh Hashanah, the righteous get written in right away, the wicked get written in right away, and it's those middle-of-the-road people that, like us, like me, not like you, you're all righteous, but at least not like me, right? The middle-of-the-road people, that's when we need the 10 days of Yom Kippur. So we get judged every year on Yom HaDin. We get judged on Rosh Hashanah. We get judged on our Yom HaDin, which is the day we pass. And we get judged again on the end of days. There will be a time when the end of days is, and we'll discuss that in a second. And that's really what we call Tchiyat HaMetim, the resurrection of the dead. We will get judged once again then, or whoever's still around, one way or another. Now, what happens on Yom HaDin is when we die, so there are two places to go. There are two places to go. We're familiar with that. Judaism believe in heaven and hell? No. No? What's that? Can't stay hell forever, but we believe in hell? Hellish. Do we believe in heaven?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you believe in heaven, do you believe in hell?
Yeah.
I would think there's an afterlife. You believe in heaven, right? There's also got to be, that's for the good people, you know, the ones with the halos, right? The little rings around their head. There's also got to be something the opposite, which is hell. Now we're going to discuss, God willing, if we have time, we'll discuss why the five books of the Torah never mentions
hell
or heaven. The five books of the Torah never mentions heaven. Just to note, even if it doesn't mention it, there's a reference to it, right? Where is the first reference? One of the primary references of heaven or an afterlife? When Abraham dies, what does it say? Abraham dies, it says he was gathered into his people and he was buried by his children, Yishmael and Yitzchak. Right? Now, what does it mean he was gathered to his people? You would think if he was gathered to his people, that means he was buried. But in fact, it says then he was buried. Gathered to his people, according to our tradition, means something greater. It means that he was brought to a place other than burial, right? Gathered to his people, he was brought into the world to come, something of an afterlife. And then there are other references about being buried, gathered to their fathers, gathered, etc., etc. King David, etc., was said he was gathered to his fathers. So there are references to it, but we'll discuss why not. In fact, it doesn't say it, if we have time, why it doesn't say it in the Torah. Let's go back to our, when we die, we believe in heaven and hell. Right? Heaven is called?
Gan
Eden. Garden of Eden. Hell is called?
Gehenna.
Okay? Now, Gan Eden, according to our tradition, is not in fact heaven. Right? Where do we know about Gan Eden, the Garden of Eden? From the biblical story of creation, there was a story about the Garden of Eden, right? So we make a reference that there's a Garden of Eden. According to tradition, the Garden of Eden was earth, was on in the land, on this earth. And so we refer to heaven as the Garden of Eden, but in fact it's not really the Garden of Eden. Why do we call it the Garden of Eden? Because that's the closest thing that we could come to relate to it. In other words, no one can describe, I can't describe something to you if you've never been there, if you never saw it, right? Can you describe color to a blind person, right? Or can you describe how something sounds to a deaf person? If you never touched this, if you never experienced it, you can't describe it. You can only describe it what's the closest thing that one can fathom based on their experiences of what they read. So you say, what's heaven? Heaven is the Garden of Eden, right? And what's hell? Hell is the Bronx. Also known, another name was called Gehenna, right? That's, if they knew about the Bronx in those days, they would have called it that. So the first thing we need to understand is what exactly happens at that Yom HaDin. One gets judged, the New Yorkers like the Bronx reference, right? And I'm right, no? No? Go back, I'll show you. Right? Brooklyn. We'll talk about Brooklyn later. Right? Brooklyn is in between. The Yom HaDin, after the Day of Judgment, what happens is that according to tradition, everyone goes to hell. Now the Talmud tells us, a very strange story. It says, Talmud in Tractate Sanhedrin tells us that I'm forgetting his name, the Roman Emperor had a relationship with Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, and he asked him all these questions. And he asked one of the questions he asked, he said, if the blind person, what happens if when someone dies, so their soul could say, it wasn't my fault, right? It was the body that performed these sins. It was the body that performed these sins, and so therefore I shouldn't be judged. How do I know this? Because since I've been dead, I haven't done anything wrong, because my body hasn't done anything wrong. Talmud continues and says, but the body can tell the soul, no, it's your fault that we committed these crimes, because now that we're dead, right, we haven't been able to do anything either, we haven't been inspired to do anything either, and therefore, I shouldn't be punished for the crimes that we've committed, you should be for the punished. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi tells a story and gives a parable of two guards. One was blind and one was crippled. Apparently they got them cheap, right? So the one was blind, one was crippled, and they had them guarding the king's palace, the king's vineyard. And the Talmud tells us that each one was saying that they can't get it. You know, they can't do anything to get the grapes in the vineyard because one was blind, one was crippled. So they said, if we work together, right, then actually we can actually get the grapes in the vineyard. And so one put itself on top of each other, the blind man, or the cripple put himself on top of the blind man, and they were able to get the grapes. And that's the end of the story. What most opinions explain, and therefore, when the king came out, he punished both of them because he figured out that the only way they were able to do it was combining the two together. This parable is taken in many different ways. Most of the opinions say that what happens is in judgment is that both body and soul combined get judged. Both body and soul combined get judged. And so what happens on Yom HaDin is as follows. First of all, everyone goes to hell. So if you have, and as the national greeting for New York is, go to hell, right? So I say, I know, right? Because everyone goes, according to tradition, everyone goes to hell. The question is for how long and to what degree? According to tradition, everyone, at least even the righteous go for one moment. There's a legendary story of someone who was cursed by a rabbi in the Talmud. Again, what this actually means is unclear, but the Talmud tells a story that someone was cursed and he died. And when he realized that he made a mistake, the rabbi realized he made a mistake from cursing this individual, because he didn't do anything wrong. It was a misunderstanding. That's why, you know, at the end of the day, be careful who you curse, right? So he went over and he was able to communicate with him and said, listen, if you need to, I have connections, I could bring you back. And the guy who died said, I don't want you to bring me back because one moment of hell is more than I ever could use. I never want to do it again. That's what it says. Again, I don't make these stories up, I just report them. So now the story, everyone goes to hell for just one moment, and there are different gradations. The worst of the worst, the wicked of the wicked, go to hell for how long? For 1 year, for 12 months. Which is why, according to tradition, when we say Kaddish only for 11 months, because we believe that we say Kaddish to raise the soul on behalf of the person who passed away, and we believe that the person who died, our loved ones, is not the wicked of the wicked. At least we hope, right? And so we say, okay, therefore, we're only going to say Kaddish for 11 months because we assume the last month they're already back in where they're supposed to be. The Sephardim, or certain Sephardic groups, actually say Kaddish for 11 months and over 3 weeks, I was told. Certain Sephardic groups, which makes a whole lot of sense. I think the Ashkenazim just got lazy. But the reason being is because, again, hell is only for 12 months. So if that is the case, they also say that there are different degrees. And the Talmud in Rosh Hashanah tells us that there are the burning hell, and then there are other aspects of hell. Either way, according to the tradition, everyone gets it. After they get the Yom HaDin, their Day of Judgment, what happens is that they now graduate to what we call the Olam HaNeshamot, which is the world of souls. Olam HaNishamot, the world of souls. The world of souls can be described as heaven. Now, as the Talmud explained, when one is judged, their bodies and their souls are judged together. Right? That's what the parable of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi was. That the blind man and the cripple come together. The soul and the body come together, and they get judged and punished forever long. Which means that technically, they might feel something. There's a tradition that tells, there's a Rashi that tells us, this is one of these Rashis that always spooked me out. There's a Rashi that tells us that when Jacob, when he was in Egypt, he asked his children to make sure to bury him in Israel. Remember when he passed away, they carried him to Israel, right? And they said one of the reasons why he wanted to go is he wanted to be buried with his fathers. He also didn't want to see what or feel what was going to happen. Rashi tells us his concern was is that the third plague of the remember right of the third plague. Remember your story on the Haggadah. What was the third plague? Lice. Where did the lice come from? The dirt, the ground. So he was concerned that he would feel that in the ground after he had passed away, and therefore he wanted to make sure he was out of there before the plague took place. It's one of those things that spook you out. So here we see that there is some physical feeling after one passes away, at least according to tradition, spiritually. Again, no one's ever been interviewed. After the Yom HaDin, after one goes through that judgment of hell, according to tradition, they now go, leave their body, and go to what we call the Olam HaNeshamot, which is the Garden of Eden. Now, why do we call it the Garden of Eden? It's the only thing we can relate to. What happened in the Garden of Eden? What do we know about the Garden of Eden? It was perfect. It was utopia, right? What else do we know? What do you mean by utopia? Didn't have to work. Oh, that would be beautiful, right? They didn't have to work. Why? Because everything was provided for them. By whom? By God. So whenever they needed any food or drink or anything like that, everything was provided for them. Where else did that happen, by the way? In the desert. When they walked in the desert, which is why, according to many, that if they would have done things right, at least before the sin of the golden calf, then in fact, would have gone back to the life of the Garden of Eden because God had provided everything for them. But now back to the Garden of Eden, and not only were they able to, everything was provided to them, they were able to see, feel that connection. They were able to feel as if God was right next to them, which He was, and they were able to communicate. After they sinned, they had to hide, right? But at that point, there was no embarrassment, there was no necessity for clothing because their body was irrelevant. And that's what we know of the Garden of Eden. The Garden of Eden refers to the closest one can feel to God. Where one is so cognizant of God being so present. The Talmud of Rosh Hashanah tells us as follows. It says that Rav tells us that when Olam Hav, in the world to come, there is neither food nor drink, all except everyone sits and wears their crowns and experiences the divine presence. Again, in the world to come, says Rav in Tractate Rosh Hashanah, page 17, there is no food or drink. There is no food and drink. Everyone sits around, wears their crowns, and experiences the divine presence. The first thing we need to realize is there's no food or drink. Most opinions say that means there's no physical body anymore. There's no necessity. It's only the Olam HaNeshamot. Others want to say that actually there is sustenance, but the sustenance is spiritual. And where do we know that someone is able to survive only on spiritual sustenance? Moshe, very good, right? Moshe went up 40 days and 40 nights, and what did he eat and drink? He didn't have any backpack to take his lunch, right? And these things, they didn't have coolers in those days. So he ate nothing. He was sustained by God and satiated by God. Therefore, it's the same thing. One is, feels, and there Moses was actually experiencing God's presence face to face, as it's described, the divine presence. And therefore, if one feels the divine presence, as we discussed last week when we talked about Kabbalah, which is the greatest feeling one can have, the Ein feel, experiencing the Ein Sof, where there is no, as it's defined, there is no end. So if one experiences that, right, then they don't need food, they don't need drink. And that's how Rav explains this, what happens in the world of souls. According to tradition, there are different worlds, right? There are upper worlds and there are lower worlds. What does that mean? I'm not sure. It seems to be that there are those, that it seems to be that they say that the lower worlds actually have their body and the upper worlds don't. Again, there are a variety of different opinions of exactly what takes place. It's important to know this. Now, in the when we described last week what it means to sit in heaven, it means as follows. We said that the Talmud in Tractate Tanna tells us that what do the righteous do in the world to come? They dance around the Holy One, blessed be He, and they pointed with a finger singing something that I keep forgetting the phrase. Right? I keep forgetting the verse that he quotes. So what does that tell us? What is the righteous of the righteous? What are they doing? They're as close to God as you possibly can get. Which means that those who get into the world to come, those who make it into, I don't call it the world to come, because the world to come means afterlife. That means heaven or hell. So those who get to heaven, those who get to the Garden of Eden, well, then I see it sort of like a stadium. Right? Which is, the stadium means, here it seems to be that the upper level, right? The upper level. But the stadium means is that there's, you know, we're back to the Bronx, right? Yankee Stadium, which will soon be a memory. I get a little emotional when we talk about Yankee Stadium. Right? When Yankee Stadium goes down, what you have here is you have the best seats in the house, which I like to call the rich guy seats, right? I have a friend who works on Wall Street, and he has friends in high places, and whenever, so he can get tickets sitting right behind home plate. It's very nice. It's an experience, and there's an old rule that says, once you go there, you can never go back. they say this about first class, flying first class. I don't know, I never flew first class, because if I did, I'd never make it, I'd never be able to go back. So, if you, the righteous of the righteous get the front row seats. At least, again, in the text, it seems to imply that they get the top row seats, right? The wicked, others who make it, gradually get a seat one way or another, including what we used to call the nosebleed section, right, where you're hanging out with the pigeons up there, right? And you know, Yankee Stadium fits 57,000 people. The world to come fits a whole lot more, especially because you don't need leg room, right? So we're only talking about souls, we're not talking about body. And therefore, ultimately, one can go all the way up, and that's the difference. Now, when someone says that God's presence is more powerful there, etc., that really can't make any sense, right? Why doesn't it make any sense that God is more present in the world in the Garden of Eden? Because God can't be present more or less anywhere. Right? God's everywhere. You know the song, up, up, down, down, right, left, and all around, right? I don't have to sing it, but I can bring my 2-year-old. She'll sing it for you, right? And she's a very good pointer, right? What's that? I lost my call. It was very good, right? So God is everywhere, as we discussed, or at least we can feel God everywhere. That doesn't mean He's in one place more than any other place. Right? We talk about that in Israel. One day we'll get a discussion of our Jewish perspective of Israel. Israel believed the divine providence is more present in Israel, right? And it quotes St. Luke, which is obviously the Mecca of the Jewish world, right? So God is ever present, because that's where all the Jews live, right? But God is really everywhere. What we understand is that when we get to the world to come, the Olam HaNishamot, the world of souls, we're just saying that we feel God more. We feel God more. Just a little side story. I remember my father, he just left the country so I could talk about it. So my father, years ago, when I told my father I wanted to go back for a second year to study, so he offered me all the money in the world, which he didn't have, by the way. So he worked for the Board of Education. He didn't have any money. Right? But he told me that whatever I wanted, as long as I stayed locally, he would support me, and if I didn't, he wasn't. So he said, why do you have to go to Israel? And he said, are you going to tell me that you could feel God's presence in Israel more than any other place in the world? And I said, well, yeah, it's a local call there, right? the story is that he said, well, I didn't. And I said, well, you know, I feel really bad for you because you don't know what you're missing. And he turned to me and he said, talk to your mother. And he walked out of the room, right? But in reality, there are places outside of Kotzin Luke that one can feel God's presence more. God doesn't move. We move. when we go to certain places, we're able to feel the presence. This presence is always the same. In the world of neshamot, the olam neshamot, God's presence is there. We just feel it more. Primarily because, is as we discussed last week in our class on Kabbalah, if we reality, we should be able to feel God's presence all the time. Right? What's the problem? Who gets in the way?
Body.
Me, the body, the ego. Right? This personality that I was given makes me believe, or allows me to believe, that it's me with this power and not God who's doing the power. For those of you who weren't in the class last week, you should go see somebody's notes, right? And that's what we talked about, is that really, if we're a part of God, as we discussed, we should be able to feel God all the time. The problem is that we don't allow ourselves to. In the world of souls, there, all of the inhibitions are gone. All the inhibitions are gone, and therefore one will be able to feel God's presence. However, it is also, some explain that it's contingent on the personalities of what we did in this world, both our personality and as well as what we developed. But to believe that every action in this world, Olam Hazeh, has an impact, not just physically in this world, but spiritually in the next world. And if that's the case, what is that impact? It still gives us that block from feeling God's presence. When we get to the next world and we say, well, how come I don't get to sit up there where they're selling hot dogs for a good price? You say, because when you were in this world, the world where you were able to acquire the connection to God, you didn't do it. And therefore your action or lack of action had that impact. Everybody with me so far? Okay. So after the world of souls, as we discussed, there is the next stage, which is messianic times, right? Now, messianic times is this world. It's not necessarily the next world. There are minority opinions that say that the righteous of the righteous will be allowed to come into this world in messianic times. What does that mean, coming into this world? It's when soul meets body. Right? When soul, that's the resurrection. Right? When soul meets body. In the world of souls, you don't need your body. In this world, you need your body. So at the end of days, when Tchiyat HaMetim comes, resurrection of the dead comes, that's when soul meets body and everybody comes back. Now the difference is that there are many opinions, including what I explained and I seem to subscribe to, is that when the Messiah comes, we learned this a few weeks ago, when the Messiah comes, what's going to change? Nothing. Nothing. So that's why many opinions, including Maimonides, is very against this idea. That says that no. If the Messiah didn't come in your lifetime, sorry, it's too bad. And in fact, it would seem to be that it wouldn't seem necessary, according to what we've learned, to come back when the Messiah comes. Right? If you're the righteous of the righteous and the times when the Messiah comes, so what is the Messiah? Messiah is this peace on earth, right? This utopia of peace on earth, the world will be able to recognize that there's one God, etc., etc., right? And the gathering of all the Jews, etc. But nothing, and as we said, the Yankees win every year. But otherwise, there's nothing superficial. What's that? It's not, Mashiach, Tchiyat HaMetim are different, right? So there are opinions that say that the righteous will join in Messianic times. To me, it doesn't make sense, because why are the righteous? The righteous are in the Garden of Eden, dancing around God. Why would they need to come to this world? That's one explanation, right? So when Messianic times comes, according to most opinions, that there will be some sort of peace among the world, and that will be for the living. At the end of Messianic times, remember our four stages, right? We started with Olam Hazeh. Continue, and this is all from the prayer prior to Kel Adon. We started with Olam Hazeh, we continued with Olam Haba. We said God's presence in the Messiah, in the Messianic times, as well as in Tchiyat HaMetim, in the resurrection of the dead. At the end of the resurrection, at the end of Messianic times, what happens is the resurrection of the dead for the Yom HaDin, the Day of Judgment. Now, not the next Day of Judgment. One thing I forgot to mention is that what happens. If we take a step back, what happens after your first day of judgment? You get your punishment, right? Now, what happens if then you don't make the cut? Meaning, after one's judgment, one is sort of cleansed to be able to make it to the world of souls, right? In fact, we believe that part of burial is that as well. Which is why at burial we say the prayer B'hu rachum yechaper avon, that he should be merciful and forgive your sins. That's what we say when we bury somebody. So when you bury somebody, the whole process is part of your day of judgment. You get your hell as part of your punishment, because everything, every action has a reaction. Once you're cleansed, then you go to the world. You go to the world of souls. What happens if you don't get cleansed, or if you are so bad that you don't make it? You stay? You don't stay. It said the worst of the worst lasts 12 months, right? So where do you go? Where do you go? What? You've been in hell. You've been in hell. Hell is only 12 months. So there's somewhere, right? Where do you go? Where do you take your ticket?
What?
So you come back to the Bronx, right? So there are opinions that say that those who are not condemned to hell, but don't make, in other words, condemned to eternal hell, or condemned to eternity of our lack of heaven, as we'll explain in a second, they end up coming back. They are coming back. Now, everybody, there was a movie with Chevy Chase. He came back as a dog. Everybody remember that? And he had to solve a crime. I thought that was very, very spiritual. It was a very cute dog, by the way. I think it was Benji. there is, whether anyone comes back as a dog or comes back whatever, it seems to be that there is a tradition of what we call Gilgul. A Gilgul means rolling. Those remember the song about the train? Hine rakevet, he mistovevet, the train goes around, agal golim, agal golim, agal golim, choo choo. You can tell which stage in life I am with my kids, right? So the Gilgul means the souls are rolling. To some that says that that's even more torture than anything else, because they're, as they say in the old country, nishta here and nishta there, right? They're neither place. Some say that they get put back into this world as a body, and then put into someone the soul is replanted to try to fix what they did wrong. Some say that they actually don't, and they just are spirits that float around. I don't like to think about this stuff too much, but that's, again, that's what the tradition is. There are beliefs of the resurrection of that we are reincarnated. The Vilna Gaon. The Gaon of Vilna, who lived 200 years ago, who was not a chassid, or in fact he was the head of against the chassidim, he believed very strongly that this was something that happens. I tell people when they ask me, so what should we do? I say, I don't know. I don't really think it's relevant what it means, right? And there are those, in Stanford there was a big push, there was a guy who was a hypnotist who went around hypnotizing people and believing that he could get them to discuss their previous life. Isn't it, hey, you know, to each his own. At the end of the day, it's not my problem. My problem is to deal with this, my responsibilities in this world. And so, we believe that many people are reincarnated, reincarnated. If you go to hell, as they say in the old country of New York, and you, don't deserve to come back, there are people, as the Talmud says, who don't have a portion of the world to come. So you don't have a portion of the world to come. In other words, that you are condemned. Well, then hell ends. And what happens is that you don't make it into the world of souls. Your soul ceases to exist.